Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. That's how the Bible defines this remarkably complicated but commonly used term, faith. It's the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. To put it another way, faith is like night vision goggles for the Christian soul. It's like radar for the Christian life. It extends our vision, magnifies what we can see when our senses leave off. It penetrates the unknown when our sensibilities fail us. It sees where we cannot. Since the dawn of time, human beings have been trying to extend their vision and magnify their senses to see things they could not see. Galileo's telescope magnified human vision so that we could see into the stars. Leeuwenhoek's microscope did the same thing, except at the cellular level. Alexander Graham Bell's telephone magnified the human voice across the seas. You might say that technology, at one of its essences, is the effort to make human beings larger than life itself. And that is what faith is, in one way. Faith helps us to see that we are part of something bigger than we know, part of something grander than we could ever know with our senses. And the way that the author of Hebrews makes this known to us is that he defines faith by giving us a catalog, a list of people, of all things, of real life people with real life challenges who in one way or another exemplified the life of faith. Abel, who was the first to offer a sacrifice to God. Enoch, who exemplified the life of trust and obedience. Abraham, who of all things picked up his family, picked up his life, his possessions, and ventured out into the glorious unknown. All of this on some ambiguous promise from God. And Sarah, who delivered a child, even though she was fighting all physiological odds, still delivered a child. These people, Hebrews offers to us as a definition of faith. Faith defined in this book, not in some set of theological or doctrinal presuppositions, not in some Socratic dialogue or even legal mumbo jumbo. Hebrews defines faith with flesh and blood, with real life people, with real life challenges, telling us what faith means. And so to live the life of faith means to live the life that has been lived before. To acknowledge that there have been those who have gone before us who have faced the challenges that we face, who have in one way or another been faithful followers of God. And so faith extends our vision by joining us with millions and millions of people who have lived before us, who live with us now, and who will live on into the future. To live the life of faith is to live among the faithful. And what a remarkable difference this must make. To know that whatever we're going through, whatever new experiences or challenges we face, they have been faced before by people who had not faced them before. Abel, called by God to offer a sacrifice, even though there was no other sacrifice given before then. Noah, called by God to build this strange thing called an ark, to prepare for a strange thing called a flood, even though there wasn't a strange thing called rain invented yet. And Sarah, promised by God that she would deliver a child, even though she was collecting on her Social Security at the time. Because of faith, they were able to face these things for for the first time. And so each of these great heroes of the Bible remind us of something else, that not only are we not alone, but through faith we can gain a certainty, a sureness, that no matter how unknown the future is, or how strange God's promises are, they can indeed become very real within our hearts and within our minds. And so the second part of our definition of faith is that it rises when there is impossibility. It makes possible what is impossible. It coexists with the unknown and with the impossible. Faith is that strong current of sureness in that great sea of doubt and in despair. When God calls you to do something that you have never known or done before, to do something for which you have no prior knowledge or experience, then that's when faith kicks in. Peter knew nothing of water skiing until Jesus called him out to do a wave dance with him, but faith kicked in and he walked on water. Gideon knew nothing of wielding a sword or leading an army. He was fine in sorting his wheat by himself until God called him to do something he had not done before. But faith kicked in, and Gideon led an army. Mary didn't know what to do in the presence of royalty until a king came into her house, and then faith told her exactly what to do, to bow down and worship and anoint his feet. Faith thrives in the unknown. It stretches us beyond our senses and our sensibilities. But too often we have been guilty of not having enough faith, of being too spiritually conservative, of wanting to have things spelled out completely for us before we jump in head first. Sometimes we look at our Christian lives the way we look at buying a new car. We check the consumer's guides and see which ones are the best brands. And then we look at the other magazines and look at gas mileage and repair history. Then we interview others who have had experiences with their car to see if they like it. And then we check it out ourselves and take a test drive and kick the tires a little bit and see if we have enough wiggle room in the seats. And then after all that, then we negotiate the price. And then if the price is right, then we'll think about thinking about buying the new car. But exercising faith in the Christian life is nothing like buying a car. For having faith, there is no room for risk assessment, no room for testing the waters, because what God might be calling you to do is something unexpected and unprecedented, something for which you have no prior experience, no prior frame of reference. Faith calls you to throw down your previous expectations and jump, dive, cannonball in into the glorious unknown. Faith does a remarkable thing. Not only does it remind us that we're not alone and part of a grander scheme, and not only does it exist in the realm of possibility, it convinces you that what is impossible is possible. That what is impractical is practical. That what is unrealistic is realistic. And how does it happen? Because faith has a sidekick. When you have faith, you have trust. Trust in God. And what does trust in God mean? It means that you have a divine conduit, a way of being completely linked, intimately linked with a God who loves you and cares for you. So that when you have faith, you can feel the heart of God, you can know the will of God, you can share the vision of God. When we have faith, our hearts can be shaped by the things that shape the heart of God. And our vision and our minds can be molded into what God wants us to be. Faith makes this possible, and when it happens, we become convinced that God knows exactly what God is doing. I like the definition of faith that John Calvin gives us, It is not a distant view, he says. Faith is not a distant view, but a warm embrace of Christ. Faith means that we can become intimately linked with God, trusting in God when we can trust no other. And because of that, we can become convinced that God knows exactly what God is doing, and we can venture into the future. But you know that trust doesn't come easy, does it? Too often we have been let down by people that we have trusted. Institutions have failed us, systems have failed us, people have failed us. Often it goes against our nature to put all of our eggs in one basket, or to put all of our complete trust in any one person. We live in a culture of distrust. The author of the book 13th Gen reminds us that we have always lived in a society where we are skeptical. The catchphrase in the 60s, you remember, was "Don't trust anyone over 30. They go on to say that the catchphrase of the 90s is "Don't trust anyone under 30. We live in a world of distrust. There's a humorous, maybe humorous, story told of a father who took his son out into the backyard one day and stood him up on the railing of his back porch, standing nice and tall. And the father went down to the lawn below and called out to his son and encouraged him to jump, fly into the air, because the father would catch him. And the son would refuse, and the father would continue to coax and encourage. Finally, the son believed his father and trusted his father and jumped high into the air. And right in the middle of the air, the father took several steps back and put his arms down and watched as his son hit the ground. And the father walked over to his son and brushed him off and dried his tears and patted him on the back and said, "Now let that be a lesson to you, son. Don't ever trust anyone." You're laughing. It's not funny. But despite our human tendencies to distrust others, faith makes this remarkable thing possible, that we can trust in a loving parent who never lets us down. Trust in a God who cares for us deeply, who wants us to become the best that we can possibly be. And even though we experience things that we have never experienced before and face challenges that we have never faced, faith links us intimately to a God who cares for us and enables us to trust. And that makes all the difference. And so we have kind of a working definition now, don't we, of what it means to have faith. But there is one more component that we need to address, probably the most important component of all, because it is important not just to have a cognitive understanding of what faith means and not just let faith dwell in the cognitive or in the emotive, but it must also dwell in the active as well. Faith must not only be understood, we must not only have a definition of faith, we must have a practice of faith as well. And this is the remarkable thing that Hebrews does for us in sharing real life people. For they not only understood faith, they lived faith as well. In their every being and in their every action, they knew that what God was calling them to do was requiring an action, a response on their part. And so it is for us. If faith must truly be understood, it must be truly practiced as well. I'm sure you've heard the story of the tightrope walker who long ago did some remarkable aerial feats. He would spend his time over in Paris amazing people by doing tightrope acts on scary, scary heights. One day his act got old, so he decided to blindfold himself and still go across the tightrope without a safety net. And one day that act got old, so he decided to add to his blindfold a wheelbarrow that he pushed back and forth along the tightropes. Amazing people over in France. An American promoter got word of this man and gave him a call one day and said, "Mr. Tightrope Walker, I have some folks here who would love to see your act over here in the United States. This is what I'd like you to do. I will give you a substantial sum of money and do a great deal of promotion, and I would like for you to do your tightrope act, blindfold and wheelbarrow and all, across Niagara Falls. I'd like for you to start on the Canadian side and then walk over to the American side." And after some coaxing and encouraging, the tightrope walker accepted and went over to the States. And what an incredible sight it was. People gathered from all over. Drums were rolling. The suspension was building. The suspense was building. And the man with his blindfold and his wheelbarrow walked from the Canadian side all the way to the American side. And there that American promoter was waiting for him at the other end of the line. And he said, "I knew you could do it. I had perfect faith that you could do it." And the tightrope walker said, "You don't really believe that I can do it, do you?" He said, "Of course I can. I just saw you do it." The tightrope walker said, "If you really believe, then hop into the wheelbarrow." That's what faith is. Faith doesn't just mean believing the right things, or knowing the right scriptures, or being able to recite the right things. Faith demands action. It demands a life that reinforces all that we know and understand. It involves our hands, it involves our feet, it involves our mouths, not just our hearts and our minds. The unifying characteristic among all the people mentioned in this glorious passage in Hebrews is that they were willing to define faith with their lives. And that is the compelling call for us this morning. What does faith mean to you, and how are you willing to define it? Just with your minds, or with your entire lives? Many of you know the story of the Salvation Army and of its founder, William Booth. I like how William Booth once defined faith. He said, "Faith and works should travel side by side, step answering to step like the legs of men walking. First faith and then works, and then faith again and then works again, until they scarcely distinguish which is the one and which is the other." James put it in another way. You know, faith without works is dead. So the definition, the meaning of faith is twofold for us. The first part of the definition is that it links us to a grander purpose, to a grand family of which God is the head, and reminds us that we are part of a larger purpose than anything we can know, and that we can have trust in a God who is intimately attached to us and cares for us deeply, so that no matter what we go through in life, whatever new challenges and experiences we face, whatever moments of despair we have, there is faith. There is a trust in God that we can have. But the second part of the definition is as important, that we must practice the life of faith as well. And so the question that rings from our ears from hearing this word is, what is God calling you to do with your lives today? What steps of faith must you take with your actions to serve others, to serve God, and to see faith expressed, so that your works and your faith can be indistinguishable? That's the life of faith that God calls us to. What actions is God calling Bethel Church to have, so that we might exemplify for others the love of God to those who do not know it? We can only know God's will by faith. And by faith, we can make God know. That's the meaning of faith. In the name of the Creator, the Redeemer, and the Sustainer of us all.
Amen.